Welcome to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets, where world-renowned author, speaker, and holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy Morgan answers your questions and offers healthy options for raising your pets in a more holistic manner. Not sure which vaccinations should be given or how often? Not sure what to use for flea, tick, and heartworm prevention? Join Dr. Judy now as she interviews the top experts and showcases the latest products that will help your pets stay naturally healthy.
Hi, you're listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets, and I'm Sally Morgan, Dr. Judy Morgan's sister, a holistic physical therapist for pets and people, and your host today. You can hear this show every Monday and Tuesday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on DreamVision7Radio.com. And today I'm here with my guest, Ella Biddle, who I have known for probably 20 years. She is originally from Germany and graduated from veterinary school there in 1994. She worked in California for nearly 20 years, offering holistic treatments for patient care, such as animal chiropractic, acupuncture, Chinese herbs, laser treatments, craniosacral therapy, essential oils, flower essences, and even more. Due to an experience with her heart dog, Momo, it became Ella's passion to improve hospice care and the availability of hospice care for all animals. As in human care, the goal is to allow animals to live life fully and to die unhastened in a peaceful death supported by the family and at home. In more rare cases, when despite high quality care, a patient's comfort level cannot be maintained, euthanasia may be an option at the end of hospice care. Ella created the first ever online classes in geriatrics, special needs, and end-of-life care for companion animals. On this topic, she has given conference presentations at places such as the AVMA, the AHVMA, and International Symposium on Veterinary Hospice Care held at UC Davis. For more than a decade now, she has offered free non-veterinary hospice helpline available through her website, which is spiritsintransition.org. And I met Ella through Tellington Tea Touch so many years ago, and like so many people that become involved with Linda's wonderful work, Ella was an inspiration and used that work as a touchstone for her own work. So Ella, tell us more about how you got into the idea of hospice care for pets.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to share about my passion. As is true for a lot of people, I think, my quest too was sparked by an experience with this special animal in my life that you mentioned, Momo. Kind of like to joke that I'm the unpaid employee of my dead dog, but there is something to that. Momo was a German Shepherd mix who shared her life with me for a precious 17 years, first in Germany all the way through vet school, and then in the United States, traveling with me and my second dog, Plush, all over the country as I kept adding more skills to my veterinary toolbox. When Momo got ill at age 17, it first just looked like a nosebleed. And of course, it is known that these can be caused by malignant tumors, but we couldn't quite pinpoint if that was the case or not and whether the issue might be treatable. So I continued to look for solutions, which may seem a bit crazy, given that 17 is an age most large dogs can only dream of reaching anyway. But I don't tend to think of animals' ages as a reason to not try to figure things out, not then and not now. Anyway, Momo ended up being anemic, and when for that reason she could no longer get up, I resorted to blood transfusions, and they made her feel great immediately, but of course this wasn't to last, just to buy us time to see if I could find a real solution. I did not, and after Momo's third blood transfusion, she showed some movements that made me wonder if she was going to seize or was in discomfort, so with the help of a friend, I packed her up to load her in the car to be euthanized, but she died in my arms within minutes of being loaded into the car. And it turns out that's actually a quite common scenario.
Yeah.
And I knew I'd missed something there. It wasn't that I didn't understand all along that she may end up dying, nor was I wanting to keep her longer than was good for her. I was grateful for our 17 years together, but she was just so present with me, also in this last month of her life, for much of the time. she was very tired at times, but I never got the sense she was wanting to be relieved from suffering, as in requesting to be euthanized. I was on the lookout for signs of that, but what I never considered, and that is really what I missed, was that there was a third possibility of responding to that situation. Not just ask her, do you want me to try to help you get well again or get out of this body, but offer her the third option of just accepting her process as she did, being present to it and her, while, of course, ensuring her comfort. It took me about a year or so to recognize what I had missed, and once I did, I saw that I was not the only one in my profession who had a complete blind spot when it comes to caring for the dying throughout the entire process. I looked for resources, and there really weren't any at the time at all in animal care of life, end of life care that I could find.
What year was that approximately, Ella?
Let me see. That was maybe 2002, so like 16 right. years ago.
Yeah.
I looked for resources, yeah, and when I couldn't find them, I just gave myself into that process with clients as their animals came to the end of their lives. They were my teachers, and after some years, I decided to share what I had learned in weekend seminars and later on in online classes and conferences, of course. Let me say this here, too, just at the beginning, if I may. People tend to throw me in an anti-euthanasia drawer, even if I tell them that I'm married to and continue to be in love with an emergency and critical care veterinarian. Mm-hmm. He cannot even guess anymore at this point whether the number of euthanasias he performed over the last 45 years are 4 or 5-digit numbers.
Right.
How could I possibly be with him if I had a judgment about people performing or electing euthanasias? I guess it's hard to understand that. What I'm doing is just taking a stand for a part of the population who is gravely underserved, still at this moment in time. What I want for all animal lovers is to have access to that third option.
It's the choice that really matters, don't you think? It's not just that, you know, I've never myself had the misfortune of having to put an animal down. I always ask them to stay with me and tell me what they need, and they've all done that beautifully, large and small. But, you know, not everyone is comfortable putting their animal down. And many people, their spiritual beliefs won't allow them to do that. So it's wonderful to have the option of hospice care.
Yep, and when we have freedom of choice, then everyone can choose whatever they feel suits their situation and animal best. So no blame nor shame on either side.
Right.
Yeah.
So can you tell us how do you define animal hospice care for those who are completely unfamiliar? What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, that's it's an interesting question. And depending on who you'd ask, the answers would certainly vary. As far as I know, even in human care, there is not a single definition of what is hospice, but it nonetheless follows very clear guidelines. The more vocal part of the veterinary profession focusing in end-of-life services calls nowadays hospice what would more accurately be called comfort care before euthanasia.
Right.
Another group of people takes a stand that if the veterinary profession uses a term that has been established in human care, clients have a right to expect and receive for their animal services that are similar to what is done in human care. As an example, veterinarians offer anesthesia, right?
Mm.
If 95% and more of animals put under anesthesia die in the process, can this service rightfully be advertised as anesthesia?
Probably not. But I know these definitions on things are, you know, areas of constant contention at veterinary conferences and animal food conferences and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, the interesting part is that they're really only a point of contention amongst professionals. If you speak with the general population, you know, all those people who do have those animals, there is complete amazement. If I ask them, you know, if they would think it's hospice if like 95% or more of the animals get euthanized. They go like, well, hell no. You know, it's really only the veterinary profession that's mostly the veterinary profession, and then, you know, whoever gets pulled into it professionally from there that are having an issue about this. And and so it's really difficult for people to find the right support. There's no quality control, no recourse. The word hospice is not protected. So as a clarification, again, you know, for today's listeners, when I use the word hospice, it means that comfort care is provided while aiming to support the animal all the way, including through its own dying process. And sometimes I will call it true hospice to distinguish it from what is put out there today as hospice. There's some guidelines, excuse me, there's guidelines that apply to the care. They're used in hospice, and you can find them on the website graceanimalhospice.org.
Mm-hmm.
It's a website you can also get to via the resource page of my spiritsintransition.org site. And the GRACE content is a collaborative effort between the founders of Brighthaven, the Nikki Hospice Foundation for Pets, and myself.
Right.
And I highly recommend reading these principles. I started engaging in hospice for animals without knowing what I was doing, just wanting to help in any way I can. And when, after some years, I was made aware of the human care principles, I was awestruck over how the exact same principles arise naturally when one fully supports dying animals and the caregiving family.
Right.
And on that CRACE site, Gail Pope, Catherine Marachino, and I aligned with a definition from human care, first stating that the way hospice is defined for humans is also applicable to animals. And the definition is that hospice is a team-oriented, interdisciplinary approach, ideally also in animal care, but not commonly available at this point, as an interdisciplinary approach, that provides compassionate quality care and support on a physical, emotional, social, and spiritual level. Now, that's a lot of territory to cover, right?
That's right, and I think that's why it's a team. I know there's a hospice organization in Eastern Mass, New York, the bigger cities of Boston and surrounds,
mm-hmm.
and it's a team of people. They have Reiki practitioners. They have therapists for the animal owners to talk with. They have veterinarians.
Yeah.
They have vet techs. They have people that do the kind of manual therapy work I do. So it's a whole team that's involved, and I think that really is what makes it special, because the person and the animal are both supported.
Yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. That's the ideal. One can be considering themselves incredibly lucky to have such a resource locally. That's for sure.
So what are some of the reasons you see that people would choose to provide hospice care for their animals?
Yeah, there. The frog wants to stay with me. There's a whole bouquet of reasons that may inspire a person to keep caring for their animal, even through a terminal illness. Here's, like, maybe the most popular benefit of giving care until an unhastened death. During hospice, an animal may still recover, against all our beliefs.
True. I've seen it myself many times.
Yeah, exactly. It occurs in human hospice, too. It's called graduating from hospice.
Right.
And this happens more often than most people think. And caregivers, as well as holistic veterinarians, like I'm sure your sister as well, can tell many a story of animals far outliving their life expectancy according to their conventional veterinarian. I actually did a poll on that and showed it in my online classes. Cats in particular, some of them may go through what appears to be their dying process, even take an agonal breath just to take a peek at the other side and decide to turn around to live on for another good while.
Yes, I've seen that in cats, and I think that might be partially where that idea of nine lives come from.
Absolutely, I agree.
Nine glances across the bridge and say, not yet.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. When I married my dear veterinarian husband, he had a cat very suitably named Love. And Love was all she was. She loved people, cats, dogs, life, you name it, she loved it. My husband had adopted her from the vet clinic he worked for when she was just a few months old. She had been dropped off as a feral at the clinic after being mauled by dogs and was lying comatose in her cage for 5 days.
Wow.
But my husband said he just didn't feel like another euthanasia, and he can't remember how come that it wasn't done by any colleagues in the other shifts. And Love died at home when she was 23. She was a very healthy cat throughout her life. Yeah.
Well, now, one of the things I know about with cats, too, and I don't know if you've heard this, that their purring modulates to the frequency of the organs in their body that need healing. And when they work with people, they do the same thing. And I feel like if you leave a cat long enough, even if they recover, and I've known of quite a few who still had like loss of function in their hind end or bowel and bladder, and give them a couple months, it just seems to recover. It's just remarkable how they heal.
They are amazing creatures. My husband has this really bad joke. As long as you put the leg with a cat into the same cage, it'll heal. Yeah, this is an emergency vet for you, right? So, I would like to share a doggy example too that you know, witnesses such an amazing ability to recover. It's Shayna that comes to mind, and she's a large-sized mix that belonged to Lady, who is a T-Touch practitioner too. And she attended a weekend seminar of mine, and Shayna had developed seizures when she was 6 or so and had since been on medications for them. And then some years later, she went into a grand mal. That's a seizure that lasted, it lasted 1.5 hours.
Oh, my gosh, that's a big seizure.
That is tremendous, you know, before the drugs were able to kick in. I mean, she went to the vet right away. So that's a pretty dire situation, right? So the communication of the veterinarian was that Shayna was bound to be a vegetable, and that euthanasia was the only responsible decision to make. But the owners decided to pack her little buddy into their car to take her home, and they were willing to give hospice if that was what was needed. They also understood that Shayna could wake back up with major brain damage and according care needs. And Shayna completely recovered within 4 days, filled with excellent rehab activity performed by the owners.
Wow, that's really impressive.
Yeah. So that's one thing we can learn from giving hospice, is it ain't over till it's over.
That's true.
We don't give hospice in hopes our animal will have a miraculous turnaround, but hospice allows for one to happen if it will. So that's the popular reason, you know, in terms of contemplating it. But as for another reason, you actually mentioned one already earlier. Some people feel the dying process is an important part of the soul's journey, and that isn't just so for us humans, but applies to animals as well. And these people by no means are all Buddhists or so. That's often assumed, but they're from all walk of life. And there is this Tibetan Book of Living and Dying it's quite a famous book. It's pretty much in every hospice around the world. In there it says the internal state we're in at the moment of death highly influences the afterlife. And it also says that the stages of dying, as observed in people, occur even in the tiniest of insects. So, yeah, that's another reason. And then, you know, there's one reason that's basically simply that people had a bad experience with euthanasia of a previous pet. I did a poll on that too at a pet expo, and it was a devastating 1/3 of the participants who stated they had had a bad experience. There's many reasons for that, and we collected those reasons too, but that would be a whole another topic. There's even people, both veterinarians and caregivers, who have shared with me the very distinct notion at the moment of its euthanasia that the animal did not want to die, but it was too late.
Right. Yeah, many a person has had some regrets around that, and it's a hard situation. You know, I tell them that, you know, you and the animal have a contract to be partners here, and this is a learning experience for both of you, and that even though this unfortunate thing happened, it doesn't diminish the years of companionship and relationship that you had prior to this event.
Very, very true. But the foremost reason to be drawn to give hospice care, as far as I can tell, simply is that most humans prefer to not shorten, not order someone to take the life of their loved ones if they can see that there is another kind option available to them. I believe that most owners who feel that their veterinarian's euthanasia recommendation is untimely can simply still perceive their animal's will to live.
That's true. I have a client right now who will not go to a particular veterinary practice in our area that has a pretty large number of vets in the practice because one vet recommended that they put their animal down, and mm-hmm. the animal lived about 2 more years, and mm-hmm. the person, you know, went to alternative medicine and the animal recovered. And, you know, it really, it's a risk. And people may bring in an animal to put down that has, you know, like a spinal cord injury, or in my case with corgis, they often have degenerative myelopathy, and they can have a good quality of life for a long time with that, but people don't want to manage it. Or maybe grandma passed away, and now we have this elderly cat. So there's lots of reasons not to euthanize an animal, and instead to give them that quality of life until their last moments here.
Yeah. Yeah, and then some people, you know, who have had an experience with high-quality human hospice prior to having to enter that phase with their animal, they simply wonder, isn't that what we can do for it too? You know, so
that's right.
That can be another reason. Yeah.
Yeah, I found when I was working in a big nursing home and I would go up to the hospice unit, I have many animal clients that came from the relatives of people that were impressed with the care the veterans were receiving on that unit. So it's time now to take our first break to hear from our sponsors, but we'll be back in a few minutes with more of our show with Ella Biddle, who is a hospice care for animals veterinarian and specialist. We'll be right back.
Interested in learning more? Visit Dr. Morgan's website at www.drjudymorgan.com, where you'll find detailed information about her blogs, a schedule of her upcoming speaking engagements, free information about integrative and holistic medicine, as well as an interactive forum where anyone can ask Dr. Morgan a question completely for free. Visit her website today to join the mailing list, where you'll find exclusive information and promotions only available to those select subscribers. Dr. Morgan is an accomplished author, having published several books about veterinary medicine and home cooking for your pets. You can find From Needles to Natural, detailing her journey from practicing traditional medicine to understanding the healing power of holistic practices today on Amazon Prime, as well as What's for Dinner, Dexter, and Canine Kitchen Capers, which are two great recipe books that you'll find both delicious and entertaining. When it comes to our pets' health, you can never be too careful. We invest significant time in ensuring that they have long and happy lives, but it's important to invest the same dedication into our own longevity. The key active ingredient in Dr. Morgan's wellness formula, Pure New Zealand Deer Antler Velvet, is now available as a standalone human-grade product. Life Deer Antler Velvet is a whole food supplement rich in calcium and collagen to support healthy joints and strong bones. Our products prioritize purity, ethical harvesting, and quality sourcing above all else. Visit LifePureRecovery.com to learn more and order your first bottle today.
Tune in to world-renowned author, speaker, and holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy Morgan. And now, radio host of Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Monday and Tuesday, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Not sure which vaccinations should be given or how often? Not sure which food is best for your individual pet? Find out the answers to your questions in this weekly show where Dr. Judy interviews top experts and showcases the latest products that will help your pets stay naturally healthy.
Does your dog have bad breath? Tired of spending money on expensive dental procedures? Try out Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops today and save money while maintaining your pet's oral health. With New Zealand deer antler velvet as the primary ingredient, Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops are effective for treating stomatitis, gingivitis, and ulcers. You can purchase Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops directly from Amazon Prime or from her website, www.drjudymorgan.com. Dr. Morgan's wellness formula for dogs and cats provides multiple health benefits in one product. Made with all natural ingredients sourced from New Zealand, this supplement can be used routinely to maintain overall physical and mental well-being. This product is particularly beneficial for the maintenance of joint health, nerve and brain function, skin and coat health, immune function, gut health, and liver health. Find Dr. Morgan's wellness supplement today on Amazon Prime or at her website, drjudymorgan.com.
Hello, welcome back. You're listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on DreamVision7Radio.com. And I'm your host, holistic physical therapist for pets and people, and Dr. Judy Morgan's sister, Sally Morgan. And I'm here with my guest, hospice care specialist and veterinarian, Ella Biddle. And Ella, I was wondering if you could tell us, what do you think people are afraid of when they're choosing hospice care for their pets?
Yeah. It is kind of a scary endeavor for many, that's for sure. And there's all kinds of challenges that one has to face. But I'd like to concentrate, I think, on the main top fear, the number one fear that we all share, and I'm sure every one of our listeners could tell us what it is right now.
Right.
Yeah, you know too. It's that fear to make an animal suffer. And no one can get by this one when choosing hospice. As a matter of fact, this fear alone can cause considerable suffering of especially the caregiver.
True.
And in the less experienced one, it may not even directly coincide at all with how the animal is doing at the time. This is simply because our mind's tendency is to anticipate, you know, going into the future instead of staying in the present. And when we're afraid and under stress, we anticipate the worst being that we may cause suffering to our animal.
And, of course, our stress level is transmitted to our pets, and they pick
exactly.
up on that, and that creates tension in their bodies and could result in pain when they didn't have pain.
Exactly. And we have been offered a solution to get out of this predicament. Most of us grew up being told that euthanasia is the last gift you owe to your animal so that it won't have to suffer. It's a message broadcasted across the media, complete with instructions on how to literally calculate when your animal is ready, in quotation marks, when it's time for the responsible type of owner to make the decision to euthanize. And if one takes a closer look at those reasons, though, one can see they are only reasons for as long as one cannot embrace dying as a part of life, as something that's not to be feared or avoided, which is a hospice guideline. And owners drawn to hospice, they mainly just follow their gut instinct, that instinct being what allows them their close connection to their animal in the first place. So their gut instinct says, no matter what anyone else says, not even if my veterinarian says it, it's not the right time to take the life of this animal.
So
now
true.
What?
I think it's so important to support people in their choice, and it's hard. I think that a lot of veterinarians have a hard time doing that, which brings me to the next thing I'd like to know. If I were living in some remote area and I didn't have any hospice-skilled caretakers, What would I look for with my veterinarian? What would I talk to them about if I was requesting them to provide me with hospice care for my pet?
Yeah, it sure can be a challenge to find a veterinarian and who truly understands hospice care. This may be even true in a less rural environment. And ideally, you want the vet you and your animal are familiar with and trust to be the one to remain on your side rather than switching to another one last minute. But no matter how wonderful your family veterinarian has been to you thus far, it is important to find out where she or he stands when it comes to giving hospice care all the way to an unhastened death. Our helpline inquiries are unfortunately full of people who felt they had a truly wonderful vet over many years until the owner did not yield to a euthanasia recommendation. People are highly vulnerable in that situation, and even kindly spoken euthanasia suggestions can feel like a razor blade when the owner feels the animal is not ready to leave its life and senses opposition in the veterinarian. So, yeah, I think one can kind of concentrate on maybe like four criteria or so. I mean, there's more, but in the framework of this, let me just go over those, and that's the thing that we tell everyone on our helpline also is that you have to have a veterinarian that provides 24/7 phone support. This should not be outsourced to the next emergency clinic, as one never knows which vet is on call and what their outlook is on hospice. Most likely, it's not going to be compatible. It's best to stay out of emergency settings if at all possible.
Especially now that we have those big emergency centers in so many areas I mean, you may be separated from your animal when you arrive and wait hours and not even know what's happening. So, it's really important that you have someone that support.
You know, that was actually the reason why I had two reasons why I wanted to become a veterinarian. Number one was I wanted to be able to relieve an animal suffering by euthanasia. Isn't that paradox?
Huh.
And the other one, and that's why I'm thinking of it right now, is I didn't want to be separated from my animal. I was literally willing to do everything it took to become a veterinarian just so I would not be separated from my animal at
the
time of its
pregnancy. Right, if you care with some person you don't know or trust or have no idea what's happening.
Yeah.
And ironically, that's exactly what your career has been, is helping people through that process of not leaving their animals.
Yeah. So, if one can stay out of those emergency settings, that's ideal. But if it's clear that this is the only way to get advice during the night, we recommend ahead of time to have the regular DVM sign a form we call Special Needs Care or Hospice Care Certificate. We have that on our resources page so that you can hold proof in your clammy hands that you have not been a neglectful owner, as it easily will be assumed when one has to bring in a terminally ill animal in the end stages. So, that 24/7 phone support is one thing. The another one is to not only have phone support, but also have a veterinarian be willing to come to the house around the clock. This, too, is, of course, helping to stay out of the emergency clinics. And anyone who has given hospice knows that a point comes when it feels utterly inappropriate to have the dying individual undergo a transport. When help is needed, it has to come to the patient, whether it is treatment or to cover the off chance that euthanasia is needed. Euthanasias are not scheduled in advance in hospice. If an animal is comfortable enough now, why would it not be comfortable enough on Saturday at 11 a.m.? So to be on call throughout the night is really quite a challenge to the private life of veterinarians. It may be possible to include a house call vet in the support team who's on call or rotate between several clinics if one has been able to locate like-minded in several places. So that's the second thing, priority that we look for when trying to locate a veterinarian. So I should have probably said as number one, really, that the veterinarian has to be aligned with the owner's goal for an unhastened death. I mean, that's the ground one stands on. Without that, it's not gonna be easy for anyone involved. And then the fourth requirement is that the veterinarian really needs to provide at least a sedative and a strong, fast-acting painkiller for the owner to keep on hand. And that best in a sublingual form, but in any case, in a form that does not require swallowing. The swallow reflex ceases towards the end of the dying process, so it cannot be regular oral pills.
Right.
Every human hospice gives a often sealed comfort kit to the caregivers of the patient so that immediate action can be taken in case of a sudden crisis. And they respond, 24/7 to the phone immediately. And they also have people come out. But just that time delay between, let's say, breakthrough pain occurring, which is a sudden high increase in pain, usually unanticipated, when it happens the first time, in that moment, you have to be able to do something. You cannot wait for someone to get in their car and come driving over. It's not feasible.
Right.
So in animal care, this is often a tremendous stumbling block, as strong painkillers like morphine are tightly controlled substances. And some veterinarians hate the paperwork involved. Can't blame them for that. And are even afraid to lose their license. Or they may not even have a license for controlled substances. You know, have to renew those every year. And if you're a holistic veterinarian, you may not even keep one. So, if one wants to get into more detail about this, which I highly recommend, there is a document in our resource page with a header, something like, "Will your veterinarian provide hospice care? Question may help find you out," or something like that.
Thing I think, too, for people to remember is that in most cases, you're not going to need to call your veterinarian in the middle of the night. And, for lots of animals dying naturally, unless they have something like cancer that could create that pain in the middle of the night, certainly for my dogs with DM who are gradually losing innervation throughout their body, they don't have pain, or at least that's what they say. I'm not 100% sure I agree. But I was able to manage them and certainly wait until 6 in the morning or not after 10 at night to make that call to the veterinarian I was working with at the time.
Yeah, that's a very, very good comment to make, because I always feel like, I have to cover the basics. People do not prepare enough for these situations when they really need this type of thing that I'm talking about. The thing is, most of the time, indeed, you will not need them. You will not need to have the vet come out. If you have been prepared well for what to expect and how to respond to a change of situation. And so this is really, it's really for that moment that we hope won't even happen. But I have witnessed what it means if that moment happens and you are not prepared.
Right.
Not directly with my own animals, but or even my clients, because I make sure they're prepared. But through the helpline, and conversations with other veterinarians, and I think these situations are also what instills the fear in other veterinarians to not wanting to engage in hospice. So just make sure this doesn't happen. But it happens so rarely, and one can prepare for it. So it doesn't need to be a reason to not engage in hospice at all.
Well, that's good advice, and now it's time for us to take another break to hear from our sponsors. You're listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets with physical therapist for pets and people, Sally Morgan, Judy's sister, on DreamVision7Radio.com. We'll be back in a few moments with our guest, Ella Biddle.
Interested in learning more? Visit Dr. Morgan's website at www.drjudymorgan.com, where you'll find detailed information about her blogs, a schedule of her upcoming speaking engagements, free information about integrative and holistic medicine, as well as an interactive forum where anyone can ask Dr. Morgan a question completely for free. Visit her website today to join the mailing list, where you'll find exclusive information and promotions only available to those select subscribers. Dr. Morgan is an accomplished author, having published several books about veterinary medicine and home cooking for your pets. You can find From Needles to Natural, detailing her journey from practicing traditional medicine to understanding the healing power of holistic practices today on Amazon Prime, as well as What's for Dinner, Dexter, and Canine Kitchen Capers, which are two great recipe books that you'll find both delicious and entertaining. When it comes to our pets' health, you can never be too careful. We invest significant time in ensuring that they have long and happy lives, but it's important to invest the same dedication into our own longevity. The key active ingredient in Dr. Morgan's wellness formula, Pure New Zealand Deer Antler Velvet, is now available as a standalone human-grade product. Life Deer Antler Velvet is a whole food supplement rich in calcium and collagen to support healthy joints and strong bones. Our products prioritize purity, ethical harvesting, and quality sourcing above all else. Visit LifePureRecovery.com to learn more and order your first bottle today.
Tune in to world-renowned author, speaker, and holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy Morgan, and now radio host of Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Monday and Tuesday, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Not sure which vaccinations should be given or how often? Not sure which food is best for your individual pet? Find out the answers to your questions in this weekly show, where Dr. Judy interviews top experts and showcases the latest products that will help your pets stay naturally healthy.
Does your dog have bad breath? Tired of spending money on expensive dental procedures? Try out Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops today and save money while maintaining your pet's oral health. With New Zealand Deer Antler Velvet as the primary ingredient, Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops are effective for treating stomatitis, gingivitis, and ulcers. You can purchase Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops directly from Amazon Prime or from her website, www.drjudymorgan.com. Dr. Morgan's wellness formula for dogs and cats provides multiple health benefits in one product. Made with all natural ingredients sourced from New Zealand, this supplement can be used routinely to maintain overall physical and mental well-being. This product is particularly beneficial for the maintenance of joint health, nerve and brain function, skin and coat health, immune function, gut health, and liver health. Find Dr. Morgan's wellness supplement today on Amazon Prime or at her website, drjudymorgan.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets, and I'm holistic physical therapist and Dr. Judy's sister, Sally Morgan. And I'm here with my guest, Ella Biddle, a veterinarian who works in hospice care for pets. And Ella, we were talking before the break about what owners can do to help their animals when the vet is not available or on their way, and you were strongly advocating that the vet be available if you are working with someone to provide hospice care for your pet. But I just wanted to mention, as a T-Touch practitioner, and you are as well, that I think it's really important to also include some of the things that owners can do for their pets themselves, such as learning T-Touches, and maybe in some cases Reiki, and things that they can do to help their animals when they're in transition. And can you just talk a little bit about integrating conventional and integrative care in hospice settings?
Yeah. That is basically what I have done all along, is integrative care with my patients, because, I did it in combo with their primary veterinarians, because I solely offer the holistic part, but I collaborated, you know, with the other veterinarians as far as it was possible. So, I was a human hospice volunteer for a while, and I could not help silently wishing at times that the patients would have been offered some Chinese herbs or homeopathics to increase comfort. But it wasn't my place to turn things upside down there, so it's enough I try that in the animal field. I think it has tremendous tools, tremendous possibilities, you know, to to use all the tools that we have. And sometimes even the smallest little things can make such a difference, like a not too hot a water bottle on a belly. You know,
right.
It can dissolve painful, painful spasms. It doesn't always have to be a pill by any means. So, yeah, I have certainly used T-Touch. It would not be an appropriate method. I don't think it would be an efficient method in the moment of breakthrough pain,
right,
unless one is very skilled and fortunate. But so it doesn't replace, you know, what we said prior. But anything that the owner can do, and there's even scientific research that shows that pain relief happens to a patient, and these were terminal cancer patients as far as I recall, when they are touched by a human being, does not have to be their loved one, in any way, shape, or form. They compared, like, trained professionals, the touch of trained professionals, with people who just randomly put their hands on different locations on the body, and there was pain relief. So,
yeah, some of the studies I've seen like that say that the intention of the person to bring comfort or be present matters just as much as who they are in the person's life or the animal's
life.
Yeah,
or just compassion. I think compassion it by itself, you know, is just a really healing ingredient. You know, one of the great benefits of limiting the number of medications, the conventional medications in a patient, is that it can become so very tricky to sort out whether a patient's problem comes from an actual disease progression or an unwanted reaction to a medication. So, you know, that one, if that was the case, would have to instantly lower the dose or discontinue it. But it often is not clear. So the less medications an animal is on, the less problems we may run into. I want to also say that I found amongst my clients that were so committed to holistic options and very successful in avoiding the need for medications throughout their animal's life, they were so fearful of side effects of medications that when it came to hospice, I, as their holistic vet, found myself trying to talk them off the tree. It feels kind of paradox. But I think it's absolutely wonderful if an animal was not on much medications throughout its life, because it'll come into hospice often with its organs still going very strong.
Right.
So we know that it likely won't have a long time left to live. So even if we now use conventional medications, there won't be a very long term exposure. So that kind of an animal that already had long-term exposure throughout its life to a lot of medications is likely not to fare quite as well with a bunch of medications becoming necessary during hospice. Yeah, it's a delicate balance with often not entirely known factors. I want to give an example of that I fondly remember of how effective something tiny, like holding a couple acupressure points, can be, and also a little bit of the mystery that we may encounter in hospice at times. I remember a lovely chocolate lab. His name was Fudge. He's one of my early teachers, and I had decided to spend the night with him, as the owner had shared that she had not gotten much sleep for a while. And Fudge would wake up every night breathing a bit heavy and coughing, and it would take quite some time for him to go back to rest, which was taking its toll on the owner too, of course. So upon questioning, I was told Fudge would wake up at about the same time every night. I think it was 2:30 a.m. And in traditional Chinese medicine, that tells us that the liver is taxed. And Fudge was on a lot of medications. So that made complete sense. So shortly before I laid down to go to sleep on the pad next to Fudge on the floor, I took a few minutes to lightly hold some liver sedating points, and then I went to bed. And it was so funny. At exactly 2:30, I woke up from a voice stating clearly, "It is 2:30, and Fudge is sleeping quietly."
Huh.
I was just like, "What?" And, you know, I sat up, and there was no other person in the room. I looked at Fudge, happy to see him sleeping quietly, and then I laid back down to sleep, and all of us slept until the morning. The owner had an undisturbed night of sleep in her normal bed, and we're all good. And it was just a few minutes of having a finger on a particular point on someone's body. So it's marvelous. It's marvelous what integrative care can do.
Yeah, and in my own experience, having a really good quality animal communicator who knows my dog has been really instrumental in helping him stay quiet through the night by doing what he wanted, giving him a buddy, talking to him a specific way before bed, coming down to check on him, and he was able to sleep peacefully without complaining when I did what the person had suggested or what he had suggested to her. Tell me about what people have said about their experience of giving hospice care to their animals once their animal has crossed the Rainbow Bridge? Tell me what some of your happier clients have had to say to you about the magic of hospice care.
You know, I would say all my clients were happy and content with, I don't know if happy is what one, a feeling that applies in that moment, but, you know, they were satisfied. They were fulfilled. They were grateful for their experience. If I was only given one sentence to summarize this, it would be something like, it was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, and I would do it again in a heartbeat. People often say that to make a euthanasia decision for their animal was the hardest thing they have done in their lives. It is a very hard thing for sure, but it's over so fast. Sure, we have to deal with the grief, but most get right on with life, admittedly using busyness as distraction. And those who have chosen euthanasia for prior animals and then commit themselves to giving hospice, they experience that in many ways it is more strenuous. To give that care for days and weeks and months on end while not getting enough sleep or rest, while having to postpone life and shuffle work, while feeling torn over about what is the best next step to take in an ever-changing situation, and to sustain one's energy even when surrounded by well-meaning but not quite so much in tune with the animal kind of friend, echoing the media-fed notion, don't you think it's time to relieve your darling from its suffering? It's hard, hard work. And those who have been present to their animal, passing peacefully in its own time, they feel changed forever. Their grieving process is usually much milder. They know they have done everything they possibly could without a smidge of doubt. They have processed a lot of their grief while caring for their animal loved one, while being still in its presence. And they do not for a second have to wonder if their animal could have lived longer if they would have done something differently. They have looked death in the face without resisting it, without trying to rush it. And those who do this report to us it makes them feel more prepared for the ones amongst their human loved ones when they go into hospice and also their own death. It's
yeah,
really good
animals
stuff.
Have so much wisdom to share with us, and that dying process is part of that wisdom. And my great friend Bernie Siegel says, you know, part of animals' roles in our lives is to teach us about living and dying because their lives are so much shorter than ours.
I think providing care
really gives us a window into that process. And I think from my own experience, certainly having dogs with DM, which take a long time, 2 years of suffering and constant care, I and any other Corgi or German Shepherd or Boxer owner or whatever has gone through this, the relationship with your animal is very different when you've gone through that process. And I think that's true in hospice care in general, that you have a kind of a closeness, a different, unique bond that is separate from the life you've had with that dog when you're able to give hospice care.
Yeah. Yeah, it deepens. It brings even more depth. It's kind of hard to imagine, but it brings even more depth into the relationship.
Can you tell me what you've seen with other animal family members when an animal has crossed the Rainbow Bridge? This is something I think is one of the gifts of hospice, is that the other animals can be present.
Yeah, I can just first of all, plain say animals grieve too. And we may be able to observe that at times very clearly and at other times not. But one thing to keep in mind is that just like a person, an animal may grieve without showing major signs. I certainly don't see myself as a grief specialist by any means, but I find that there are three main possibilities. Either an animal will grieve visibly or invisibly, or it doesn't really care much. That can happen too. Maybe it never liked the animal that died or simply never was too interested in it anyway, though, stressful relationships between two animals in the past do not warrant that a surviving animal won't grieve the one that has passed. Anything can happen. Or thirdly, a surviving animal can be plain happy that the other one isn't there anymore. That happens too. For example, a dog climbs up in rank due to the passing of the previous leader who has always kept the thumb on this dog prior. The dog may happily step up to playing the first fiddle, or it may feel disoriented and wonder what dog to obey next. Anything is possible. So my general recommendation is to assume an animal is grieving, the surviving animal body is grieving, short of a very apparently relieved, happy survivor. Grief is really natural and important, and at the same time, it can impair an animal's health. So, just like it can in people, with both ourselves and our animals, it is important to realize that after tending to the deceased one, it is now time to tend to ourselves and our family. But there are some opportunities already before an animal passes that you kind of pointed towards, I think. Some animals are literally born hospice volunteers.
Oh, that is another whole topic, Ella, but yeah. Sadly, we are out of time, and
yeah.
Certainly we'll have you back because that's something I have a lot of experience with, and
yeah.
It's been just a pleasure talking to you. Just a reminder to our listeners that Ella's website is spiritsintransition.org. And until next week, thank you so much for listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets with your host today, Sally Morgan, holistic physical therapist for pets and people, and Dr. Judy's sister. And thank you so much to our guest, Ella Biddle. And we'll see you next time on DreamVision7Radio.com. Thanks for joining us.
That's all for today. Find more answers to your questions next time on Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets every Monday and Tuesday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time by going to DreamVision7Radio.com. Join holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy to discover healthy options for raising your pets in a more holistic manner. Visit DrJudyMorgan.com to learn more.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.